Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, made an impassioned speech before the Eruchtis today, where he asked Ireland to convince its EU partners to introduce more rigid sanctions against Russia to stop what he called the Russian war machine. This comes just a day after he addressed the UN Security Council, during which he accused Russia of committing atrocities and criticised the UN's inaction over the war. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is being seen as the ultimate stress test for international law and international institutions. So what role do they play while the war rages on? For some expert analysis on this now, I'm joined by John B. Bellinger III, a former legal advisor to the US Secretary of State and the National Security Council. Mr. Bellinger III, you're very welcome to the programme.
Nice to be with you.
It is indeed that, isn't it, this war, the ultimate stress test of international institutions and international law. Where should we focus our attention in terms of those institutions for this conversation, in your opinion?
Well, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, it is a violation of the most important principle of the UN Charter, which is non-aggression against one's neighbors. And Russia has violated what we call Article 2, Paragraph 4 of the UN Charter by invading Ukraine with no excuse. And of course, Russia is a permanent member of the Security Council, which is under the UN Charter supposed to be upholding peace and security. So we essentially have got a major threat to the whole concept of the United Nations and the UN Charter, and the question is what to do about it. The ICC, the International Criminal Court, is investigating the war crimes, but we need to look at Russia's continued role in the United Nations and the Security Council.
What to do about it, indeed, because isn't there a great disparity, John, between world leaders and diplomats at the United Nations? Essentially, whatever they say, essentially they're just talking. And then you see an address like President Zelensky's today and to various parliaments across the world. He's succinct, he's precise, he's powerful. He wants help with the fight, he wants sanctions, he wants to isolate Russia and to prosecute them. There's a great disparity there. There's a man of action and words, and then there are simply words. Is there any way the international institutions can come up to the challenge here?
Well, there are some things to be done. The International Criminal Court is investigating what appear to be serious war crimes. I expect there probably will be indictments of Russian officials later this year or next year. The International Court of Justice, a different court, is hearing a case that Ukraine has brought against Russia. And the U.S. has already put forward a resolution to expel Russia from the Human Rights Council. The big question is whether Russia could be expelled from the United Nations altogether. Unfortunately, that is difficult because Russia has a seat on the Security Council in which it could veto measures. What I hope will happen, Cormac, is that the United States and other countries on the Security Council will sponsor a resolution that recommends the expulsion of Russia from the United Nations. Russia may veto that, but that still sends a pretty strong signal if a majority of the countries on the Security Council recommend that Russia be suspended from the United Nations. So there are some things that can be done, but it is difficult the way the United Nations is set up.
And we'll come to the prosecutions at the ICC and the ICJ in just a second, but just that motion, that action within the United Nations, if Russia were to veto that, John, it renders it really a gesture, but ineffective, really.
Perhaps so, although this is a very strong signal. If most of the countries on the Security Council, we'll have to see what China does, it would probably abstain, were to vote to recommend Russia's suspension, there's still a possibility, this would have to be explored, that even if Russia vetoes the Security Council recommendation, that the General Assembly, which has the power under the Charter of the United Nations to recommend or actually to vote on the suspension, could still take it up anyway. So there is a legal issue that still needs to be resolved. But even if Russia vetoes a recommendation that it be suspended, which Russia certainly would, mm-hmm. we're still sending Russia a very strong message that it is an outcast in the United Nations system. So at the end of the day,
I wonder, just to interrupt if I may, you may come up against more opposition to that motion than just Russia. Because the way it seems to me, and you can put me right here, the way post-World War II these international institutions have been set up is for cooperation among world powers and compromise, because no side wants to cede a dominant position to the other. And there's always, and you know this as a senior US official, there's always this play in world politics to protect your interests and your territory and your influence. Russia and China and India won't want to cede any of their influence, will they?
Well, this has been a problem for a while with the way the United Nations and the United Nations Charter were set up after World War II, with the veto-wielding powers of the five countries, whether it is China, Britain, France, the U.S., or Russia. And for many years now, before this present crisis, there have been calls for reform, for a revision of the UN Charter. But, of course, that requires a majority of countries to go along to amend the UN Charter, and we wouldn't expect that Russia or, in fact, many other countries would do that. So we do have a structural problem with the way the United Nations is set up. But still, and you raise a good point about whether it would be ineffective, but it is still a strong message if a majority of the members of the Security Council vote to suspend Russia from membership. It looks like there should be enough countries in the world in the General Assembly who would vote to expel Russia from the Human Rights Council. So we are seeing Russia's growing isolation, as well as these investigations by the International Criminal Court. So Russia can withstand this for a while, but they are increasingly isolated.
Can I ask you about what you refer to there? And you say you expect indictments at the ICC, the International Criminal Court, in 2023. Could I be a cynic for just a second? Because I spoke and I raised this point with David Sheffer, the ambassador and the prosecutor at the ICC on occasion, who I'm sure you know. Why should we be confident of a prosecution of Putin or any other senior Russian general at the ICC when Bashar al-Assad hasn't been held to account there for using chemical weapons, for example, in Syria?
Well, these are good questions. And at the end of the day, do I expect that we would see Putin or the defense minister or even senior Russian generals in the dock in The Hague? I'm not sure I can say that I expect that that will happen. Nonetheless, this is the system that we have set up. This is what the International Criminal Court was set up for. It's obviously had problems over the last 20 years, but there's a new prosecutor. And this is really going to be the moment for the ICC to investigate these crimes. And it may well be that they will be able to not only indict Russian officials, but find them in some places in the world. But this is the system that we have right now. One wishes perhaps that it might be better. But it is the problem when you have countries of great power and equal status that we have to deal with the system of international law and international institutions that we have.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it seems to be a flawed system, doesn't it, John? And I'm trying to put myself, which is impossible, in the shoes of someone in a bomb shelter in Mariupol, hoping that there's help on the way or that Putin is prosecuted quickly. That's unlikely to happen, isn't it, anytime soon, realistically now. And I also, we spoke with Mary Robinson of the Elders in this programme recently, and she was suggesting that a special tribunal be set up to prosecute for the crime of aggression. And there seems to be this discussion worldwide now about which fora should be used and what crime should be pursued.
Yeah, I've somewhat mixed views about whether there should be an additional tribunal. The problem, of course, is that the International Criminal Court, while it normally exercises jurisdiction over the crime of aggression, which has clearly occurred here, cannot do so with respect to Russia. Because Russia has not accepted the jurisdiction of the court with respect to aggression. So this has led to a number of lawyers to propose a separate tribunal where the international community would work with Ukraine to prosecute Putin or other officials only for the crime of aggression. It makes some logical sense because we have a clear state of aggression, but then we have two different tribunals who are in some competition with each other, and it may divide the international community as to which one to cooperate with. So I see the academic attractiveness of having an additional international tribunal only to investigate aggression, but as a practical matter, I wonder if it really would make a lot of sense. So yeah, we'll have to see what happens in that space.
This is not to absolve or justify what Russia is doing at all, but it has been pointed out as well that these structural flaws in the international institutions have been used by the US on occasion, vetoing motions in relation to Israeli activity in Palestinian territories, for example, on various occasions. Russia and neither the US as well, not members of the ICC. I just wonder if there are flaws, if those flaws can be rectified easily when the interests of major powers on all sides are infringed, it seems. What are your thoughts there?
Well, the answer is that they can't be rectified easily. That is the system that we set up, for better or worse, after World War II. And perhaps that was too idealistic at the time that the major powers after World War II would continue to be the major powers later on in history, or to be able to work cooperatively with each other. So these criticisms, can be fair criticisms, but it is the system that we currently have and that will not be able to be easily fixed. But just to go back to a point I made earlier, it doesn't mean that this is all room for frustration and despair. There are international institutions that are working to hold Russia account, perhaps not perfectly, but in each case, each of them is working on it. I like to quote our former ambassador to the United Nations, Henry Cabot Lodge, who was often asked, why wasn't the United Nations doing this or that, and wasn't it flawed? And he used to say, the United Nations was not intended to take us to heaven. It was intended to prevent us from going to hell.
Well, let's hope it does that and ends the hell in Ukraine somehow soon. John B. Bellinger III, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this evening.